Monster Man, episode 453, Slod to Slug, Comma Giant. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at two more entries from Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, it's time to thank some new Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is about to begin a series on Tengrism. So thank you very much, Benjamin Dyke, Zach Henderson, and Martin Rinnison. And if I've mispronounced any of your names, I do apologize. Your support means a lot to me. So we're starting today's look at Monster's Manual with the Slod. You may remember the Slod from Season 2 when we covered the Fiend Folio. They are one of the monsters that first appeared there. They, like the Githyanki, the Githzerai, the Death Knight, were created by a very young Charles Stross. Now, of course, best known as author of, among other things, the Laundry books. This entry here is pretty efficient. You get stat blocks for the most common slod, the red and blue slods, and then the other ones are expressed just as modifiers to those stat blocks, which means that this is an extremely rare example of an entry that in Monstrous Manual is actually shorter than it was in Fiend Folio, where all the individual slod types had their own entries. Maybe as a consequence of this, and I do feel like I should have been more careful what I wished for, maybe as a consequence of this, this page is almost entirely combat stats and combat stuff, because it's kind of like the bare minimum for each type in order to fit them all onto a single page. It does describe them as doing a, quote, claw-claw-bite routine, close quotes, in combat, which is very funny. I understand what they mean, but like, the old claw-claw-bite routine sounds like something an AD&D player would say. Now, it's not the shortened length of the entry that limits our knowledge of the slot or like our sense of what they might do in a game. Although there is a bit more information on that topic in the Fiend Folio, in general, the slot are quite long on powers and short on background there as well. Not even just background, but like what their deal is. They're clearly kind of parallels to demons or devils in that they have a hierarchy, they're extraplanar beings, they have Sendam and whatever the other one is, Igoral, the beings that they serve and worship. But what exactly the agenda of those beings might be is not super clear. So as I was preparing last week's episodes, I got an email from a friend of the show and co-host of This Old Dungeon, Edwin. And Edwin suggested that my criticisms of the Monstrous Manual, I mean, he didn't put it this way, but that they were becoming a bit repetitive, which is sort of true, right? I mean, I agree with that critique, because the problem with the Monstrous Manual is that, like, when an entry has something wrong with it, it's almost always the same thing wrong with it, which is that a sort of, like, overnaturalism and adherence to a formula have made the entry kind of boring. And because I too am vulnerable to that kind of formulaic thinking, I've just been kind of like going on about this every time we have one such entry, which means that a lot of episodes are just me sort of saying the same thing. And Edwin proposed, and I'm going to do it, that when I have an entry I'm not satisfied with, I give it a little makeover. So we're going to take this entry and we're going to try to zhuzh it up a little bit, you know, see if there's something that we can do to make the slod a little more interesting, or at least like tease out what is interesting about them. To me, it looks like the slod are designed to serve three functions. First, they are summoned by wizard types as muscle. Someone will open a portal to Limbo, they'll call out a slod, and the slod will kind of like be running around murdering their enemies for them, or, you know, bodyguarding them, or whatever. Bit of a waste of a slod, but it does give us the setup where, you know, you fight the evil wizard and it has this bound slod. Slods are pretty tough opponents, but also that slod is not interested in helping the wizard for some kind of like conviction or reason of principle, right? It's just kind of being compelled to do it, presumably, so you might be able to subvert it, or you might run into it again later under other circumstances. Secondly, I think once you're off the prime material plane and you're wandering around the planes, I think from the other monsters he created, I think it's pretty clear that the planar stuff was interesting to Charles Stross. And I think that the slods, you know, like these color-coded frog monsters, to some extent, are there to say, we're not in Kansas anymore. That the slod is so weird and so kind of not like a monster you would routinely run into on the prime material plane, that it's just there for kind of like a tonal shift. The third is, I wonder if Stross was running some kind of game where extraplanar factional politics was critical. So that is to say that just a lot of what was happening was within the context of, you know, rivalries between Githyanki and Githzerai or between other beings that live on other planes, right? And the slot would fit into that as well. So I wonder if he wasn't running a game that had a lot of extraplanar stuff going on in it. For me, I think there are two things about the slot. The first is that they are real bad guy, bad guys. They're cruel. They will, like, surround a weaker being and kill it, kind of just because that's what they do, like, not for any sort of tactical reason. They're addicted to kind of dominance and hierarchy. You know, it's interesting that that seems to be a really common thing about AD&D monsters, but sort of doesn't wind up being crucial to their characterization in a lot of the later game, I don't think. Anyway, whatever. I think what you do with the slot is you can kind of do it threefold, right? And so that you can have them be summoned by baddies. You can have them be a shock to the system when you leave the prime material plane. And then you can have them be political. And you can actually do that as an escalation. So first, you just have to fight this one frog monster in some guy's dungeon. And it escapes or it returns to its home plane or whatever. Second, when you get to that plane, you know, when you arrive in limbo on your extraplanar journey, then you go, oh, is this where those frog guys are from? And then third, when you're trying to put an end to like whatever, you know, extraplanar entity is like gobbling up all the planes like it's Crisis on Infinite Earths, then you have to negotiate the complex politics of all these different jerk slods. And I think the key here is the aesthetic of, like, strangeness and unfamiliarity. And maybe 40 subsequent years of history have kind of undone the slot a little bit in this respect. Because if you want a bullying conspiracy society that lives on a plane that's not the prime material plane, I think in general, you would prefer to use devils. And the same goes for creatures that could be summoned by an evil wizard that you have to fight. So I think the reason not to is because you're trying to make it feel weird, whereas devils feel familiar. I'm sure I've said this before, but if you ever watched the movie Event Horizon, there's a scene where they're talking about, I mean, spoilers for Event Horizon. In Event Horizon, there's this kind of like other dimension, which is effectively hell. And if I recall correctly, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but like Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill are talking, and Lawrence Fishburne says like, what's it like? And Sam Neill says, it's like nothing you can imagine. And then he has a vision, Lawrence Fishburne does, of this other dimension. And it's like fire, people screaming, blood, lots of like hooks and sharp things. And like, no, that's pretty much what I imagined when I imagined hell. That's not like nothing I could imagine. That's pretty bang on how like Western society's been visualizing hell pretty much since they've had the concept. And that is the advantage of devils, is that they're very readable. Like even if you yourself did not grow up in like a Christian, you know, background or a Christian household, that stuff pervades pop culture so much. And indeed, I think we could argue that hell and the devil and devils play a much more important role in popular culture than they actually do in Christian like theology or Christian belief in the modern day, that it's cool and it can be scary, but it's not unfamiliar or weird. So having like some ziggurat full of croaking frog weirdos and they're having their conversation, and when the player characters arrive, they all just stop and swivel their big froggity eyes to look at you, you know, and the gray ones stand up and kind of flex their bony spikes. Having that, even if fundamentally what it is, you know, making a deal with an evil faction in another dimension, the feel of it is very different because it's rainbow frogs. So I don't know if that's shushing it up a little bit so much as kind of like trying to figure out what it's for, but I think I feel like I know Slod a little better now and kind of have a sense of what I would do with them. The thing I was saying about kind of being undone by the subsequent 40 years is that If you are playing with the kind of people that are like very immersed in D&D, they are not going to be impressed by Slot. Our second monster for today's episode is the Slug Comet Giant. These are huge, omnivorous gastropods who are described in a pretty gruesome way. I like the bit about how they can squeeze through narrow openings, which is actually a pretty horrifying image. Like, not that it flows through narrow openings, but that it squeezes through them. But this is obviously like a slug the size of a person or larger. Pretty horrible. I think that the Slug Comet Giant is a great monster largely because the slug is such a great animal, right? It's just one of those animals that doesn't seem like it should be the way that it is. One of those kind of isn't nature wonderful things. And I think it's telling that as a kid, we're often either repelled or fascinated by them. This Tony DiTerlizzi one is particularly kind of charming looking, but, you know, it would be. I like some of the writing in this entry, too. It says, no one has ever found a good use for giant slugs. Is that how you think about giant slugs? You know, we need to find a good use for them. It also describes how, because they can squeeze through things, like, player characters might, like, run from a slug into some kind of, like, cabin or whatever and think they were safe, only to see this thing starting to, like, slime its way through some little, like, crack in the wall. But all I could think about was the idea that it describes the player characters as, like, running away, taunting the giant slug. And that feels like it's born of lived experience. The idea that a group of player characters would be fleeing from a giant slug and yet simultaneously taunting it, that feels very on brand. All right, so that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be doing a special episode at the request of one of my Patreon supporters. And that's going to be about a monster that is kind of in the D&D news at the moment, the giant space hamster. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.